it out now. No doubt, yo.
It is the Beating the Book podcast French Open betting preview. Not sure if we're allowed to call it the French Open or I'm supposed to call it Roland Garros. Not sure what the appropriate title is. Drew will have a ruling on this soon. It's Gil Alexander. The crew is back to preview from a betting perspective the Clay Court Slam at Roland Garros. Gil Alexander, Drew Dinsick from the not one but two podcast, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor, which he does multiple times a week, I believe. Off season multiple times, Drew, or just once a week?
Off season, we've been doing it multiple times a month. But regular season, we're going to go multiple times a week. We've turned into just an NFL podcast, it turns out.
Yeah, well, you know what? We're kind of all football and everything else. But that's why we love these tennis podcasts for all the tennis hardos. Deep Dive with Andy Molitor, Drew does, and of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge with Jay Croucher. And then from VEASAN, also does work for the Tennis Channel. That's a fluid situation. Gets all the dating information of all the players from Mitch Michaels. It's Zach Cohen. How you doing, Zach?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Am I allowed to say that live? I already said it, so I mean.
Yeah, you already said it. You probably shouldn't have, but we'll see. Hopefully he's not watching.
Well, care to share any dating insights with us? No, nothing. Okay. Guys, pumped to do this. Let me see where we should be live on Twitter. Let me retweet that real quick. Let us start with the men's side. We will work our way to the women's side on this stuff. Men's side, for those who are sort of landing on this for the first time, you're like, I kind of like tennis. I'm kind of into it, but I don't really know. The big news, of course, Carlos Alcaraz out of this tournament with a wrist injury. He is also going to be out of Wimbledon. All of grass season is a wash for him. So this weights the men's side of thing heavily towards Jannik Sinner. I think the three of us all got Jannik Sinner to win this tournament, sort of getting ahead of that information, minus 120. A few weeks back, he's at minus 320. Before we even break down quarters, Drew, I guess we'll start there. Folks landing on this now, minus 320 on Sinner, good for you?
Yeah, no, that's short. He should be closer to 85%, I think. So anything, his numbers should start with a four, in my opinion. And I guess in the kind of grander scheme of things, I'm kind of bummed Sinner didn't win Australian Open because I'm holding some dead tickets on Calendar Slam this year that now look like he's going to win three out of four. And the one he didn't win was the one I thought was the most likely. So, I think Sinner completes the career slam with the victory here. And I think I tread a little lightly with Sinner on clay this entire run. So I haven't really maximized potential winnings by just betting the obvious. I thought his win against Carlos in Monte Carlo was extremely impressive. But when you looked into the data, it was pretty clear something wasn't going great with Carlos and his ability to generate top spin on his forehand in that match. And then sure enough, the next match he retires. And then, you know, who knows if we'll see him again before the U.S. Open. Honestly, I mean, my guess is he'll probably pop back up for one of the two Masters on hard courts in prep for the U.S. Open. But, you know, it's tough to understand how severe the injury is to Carlos. And then, yeah, we get to, he wins the first clay Masters in Monte Carlo, translates that to possibly good form heading into Madrid, which is, you know, the type of surface and, kind of his best chance to win a clay Masters any year, irrespective of being better than every other man playing tennis. But, that it was still a little bit like, well, does he care about Madrid as much as he's going to care about, you know, the Rome Open? It had been, what, 50-something years or 70-something years that since an Italian had won the Rome Masters. And so it was like he probably is pointing more towards that. And or does he even care about either of these Masters as much as he does closing the door on his career slam at the French Open? So, you know, I was pretty tepid with really kind of getting, you know, heavily staked onto Sinner at both Madrid and Rome. And now I regret it because he was untouchable in both of those. I think it's worth noting that he did show some signs of fatigue in that Rome run, particularly against Medvedev. But in general, the quality of tennis that you're getting from him is so far beyond any other gentleman on tour that it would take something pretty, it would take an act of God, honestly, an injury or something really bizarre to stop Sinner in a best of five setting, I think.
Yeah, I happen to win three slams this year, calendar year.
Now you're in good nick. You're going to get there.
Well, two are set up nicely anyway. But you touched on it, right? Fatigue, an injury. Zach, is that enough for you not to play a minus 320 if you were landing on this now?
I wouldn't play it at minus 320. I feel like you needed to get in on it earlier. I'm still looking at this tournament kind of like the way we look at like golf tournaments where it's like winner without Scottie Scheffler. And I'll probably be looking only at the finalist numbers in the, you know, bottom half of the draw. I'm a little bit nervous about the weather for Sinner. Like you guys mentioned it, like the heat can get to him. He's been a player that has struggled in daytime conditions in the past. And I was looking at the weather in Paris for the next 10 days. And it's a lot of like low 90s. And if you get him on a sunny day, kind of wonder if like third, fourth round, if he runs into some trouble, it won't be early. Like his draw is also like, for all the conspiracy theorists there are out there that like think that everything, you know, goes Sinner's way, they are not going to be happy with what he has to face up until like pretty much the final. Like it's an insanely easy draw. But yeah, I'd always worry about him in the heat. And we kind of saw it against Medvedev. It wasn't even hot. I don't even know what was going on that day, but he was really going through it. Maybe it was an illness or something, but you can never really be too sure with him physically.
I don't want to get sidetracked here, but if you recall, I was at Indian Wells. Carlos was on top of the world at that point. And remember my comment when he lost, like I texted you both and I go, I blame it on the golf.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Okay.
He ain't playing any more golf, is he? Like this is, they're going to find a way to blame it on golf, I think, for his injury at some point. It just felt like that's where things got a little less serious for him. I can't prove it, but it just sort of felt that way to me. And that's where it all started going Yannick Sinner's way.
Yeah, I guess I'll push back a little bit on what Zach said. For me, the fatigue, you know, the way to beat Sinner is to make him play fives. And I don't know that there's anyone good enough in this tournament to make him play five. And I think the heat and the, you know, kind of the, you know, ability to kind of go a marathon distance, has eluded him to this point in his career. He has not embraced the suffering, like Alcaraz has in these best of five settings, which is the only reason I think Alcaraz has gotten the better of him. I think that's why Djokovic got the better of him in Australia. You know, it takes two to tango. And I think in general, the hotter conditions and just in general, baking that, that beautiful, red clay in Roland Garros, it's going to be a nightmare for anyone to try to keep up with them. I think the conditions are going to, the speed of the court, everything I think is going to play exactly into his strengths. And, I think it's more likely he wins this title without dropping a set than loses. Loses entirely.
That says it all right there. We were, Zach and I, off air, and then this morning on a numbers game, I think Drew, you and I sort of alluded to it also on the radio side, which is, you know, you have these kind of Fakakta clay tournaments the week in between Rome and Paris, and we wonder why some of these guys are playing. And I do wonder, right, my second thought is, maybe they just know they're not winning Paris. So they're just like, you know what, I'm gonna get me some points, I'm gonna get me some money. Whatever it is, Casper Ruud comes to mind as someone who's playing. I'm sweating a Lerner Tien match right now. Just to be thorough about the men's side before we go quarterback.
Let me give you one more Sinner thing since I did the research on this.
Well, please, please, absolutely. We're not done.
Because going back to 2000, so this century, have we ever seen a tennis player on the men's side close in this price range for a slam?
Oh, I like this.
I know Nadal never did at the French Open. I know that.
He did once.
Okay.
Yes, the year he lost to Robin Soderling, he closed minus 400 pre-tournament. That's the only time. Federer, never. Not even Federer's best Wimbledon close, I think, was minus 250 when he was, you know, winning his fifth Wimbledon in a row. Djokovic, I don't think Djokovic was ever even as short as minus 200, even at even in Melbourne, where he was, you know, owned the court there. There were 10 instances where Nadal closed pre-tournament minus money, and 11 instances where he closed minus money. He won 10 of those. The only one he lost was where he was minus 400. Coincidentally, that's where I would price Sinner for this tournament. And it has almost less to do with the excellence of Sinner, particularly on clay, and more to do with just the gap between him and the next best player.
That puts it all in perspective. That quantifies it or puts context on it better than we could ever do with words. Better than every Rafa heading into Roland Garros except for one.
It's crazy.
That's crazy. For a guy who's not even known to have this as his best service, right? Just to be thorough on the men's side, besides Carlitos being out, for those who care, Jack Draper out with a knee injury, Lorenzo Musetti out with a thigh muscle tear, Olga Rune still taking care of the Achilles injury, Dimitrov failed to qualify, not that he would have been a factor. Maybe most, just a couple players who might have in some world given Sinner some trouble. Couple players are dealing with injuries. Fonseca and Sasha Zverev dealing with injuries. There was some doubt as to whether each would make this tournament. It looks like they will. But for those looking for even, possible contenders, they're dealing with that as well. So that adds into the minus 320 as well. Doesn't mean we can't make quarter by. By the way, we're doing this on Thursday morning Pacific time. The draw came out maybe 4 or 5 hours ago, Paris time. Paris time was midday. So for us, it was very early in the morning. So we are reacting to this without quarter numbers anywhere. Danny Higgins will let us know if any pop up. But just to give an idea of the quarters on the men's side, you guys can add names as you please. Quarter one, besides Yannick Sinner, Ben Shelton is in there. Luciano Darderi, who has really good clay numbers. Matteo Berrettini, who was once upon a time a great clay player. That's Q1. Q2 is interesting for quarter bets. Medvedev, this would be the Daniil Medvedev quarter, I suppose. Flavio Cobolli is in there. Lerner Tien, Francisco Cerundolo, some of the names in that quarter. Quarter three, a little more jammed up. Djokovic, the aforementioned Fonseca, Casper Ruud, who has great clay numbers. Tommy Paul, Tomas Martín Echeverri, Mariano Navone, Alexander Blocks. And then Q4 is the Rafa Hodar. It's really the Sasha Zverev quarter, but we'll call it the Rafa Hodar quarter. Taylor Fritz is in there, who has not been playing. Tirante is in there. But that's kind of how those break down. Drew, we'll start with you. Anything in any of those quarters or just a broad view leap to mind beyond Sinner?
I was kind of surprised when I ran my numbers for Q1, who the second choice was there for me. It's not Shelton. Shelton I have as 111-1 to win Q1. He would be my fourth choice there. My second choice is Bublik at 78-1. My third choice is Tsitsipas at 83-1. So that's crazy that your second most likely winner is effectively 80-1 in Q1. So I think you can basically put a bow on that one. Q2's Zverev is my favorite, but it's pretty narrow over Hoda. Hoda, I have fair price for Q4 is plus 300. Fair price for Zverev, I have plus 158. So I'm obviously would tip Zverev as a meaningful favorite if that is a head-to-head we get in the quarterfinals there. I can't remember where Hoda is, but I feel like that would be the quarterfinal, right? Hoda, Zverev. I think you probably see Zverev minus
Q4. You said Q2? Okay.
Q4, Zverev and Hoda, I think, are on opposite sides of that. So they would meet in the quarterfinal. That's my likely quarterfinal there. And I would guess that Zverev is in the minus 150 ballpark. I hope Hoda wins. I hope Hoda's your finalist. I would play him to make the finals, if we can get that kind of a price in a plus 600 or better. I think it's bettable for Hoda to win, to make the finals. I have Ruud as the favorite in Q3.
So do I.
I have him at plus 327, fair price to win Q3. I have Djokovic as favorite for Q2. I have him at plus 270. But I don't think I would touch Djokovic with a 10-foot pole, considering how little we've seen him play since really the Australian Open. And then everybody else, I have huge question marks about. Fies, I have huge question marks. Actually, I apologize. Is Djokovic in Q3?
Yes.
Djokovic. All right, sorry about that. So Djokovic, I have slightly ahead of Ruud. Plus 270 for Djokovic, plus 327 for Ruud. I would take Ruud over Djokovic there, though. And I actually think that's like a good, that'll be a good bet when that comes out, because Djokovic should get market support. And so you may get a better price than 3-1 on Ruud for Q3. I think that's a bet.
So why is Ruud playing in Geneva this week? What is he doing?
He can't help himself. He loves these 250s, I guess. He does this every year, I feel like. We're always like, what are you doing, buddy? But you know what? Like, this has all of the whips of, you know, Ruud in another non-competitive Roland Garros final, am I right? Or Ruud in another Grand Slam, non-competitive Grand Slam final. This would be the fourth, I think. Right? He was there against Rafa. It was a non-compete. He was there against Djokovic. It was a non-compete. And he was against Carlos in the US Open. And it was a non-compete, if I remember right. Anyway, let's might as well make it four in a non-competitive French Open final. Ruud Hoda would actually be a really fun semifinal. Medvedev, I think, should be the healthy favorite for Q2 then. I have him at plus 270. If Medvedev is longer than 3-1 to win Q2, I think that'll be a very good bet. I don't think you can count on Felix Auger or Aliassim to make a deep run here at all.
What's your number on Cerundolo? Yeah.
What's your Cerundolo number? Fair for me on the quarter price is plus 687.
That's the guy for me that I would be looking
at. You like Cerundolo? You think you're going to get better than 687?
I think
7-1, 8-1, something like that?
I would hope. Yeah.
Okay.
Zach, how does this break down for you?
Same with you guys with Ruud. I think the Ruud, it looks like last year's Musetti was what it was, where it's like, why is this guy not going to win quarter three? And I think it was the exact same position in quarter three. So I really do think it's going to be Ruud. I think Ruud's going to go to the final. So I'll be looking for that. When I mentioned it before, like winner without Scottie Scheffler, I was talking about Ruud. I think Ruud is the name your finalist play in this, you know, bracket. For quarter two, I kind of think Vacherot is really interesting. I'm not sure what type of form he's going to be in. He has missed some time with injuries, but like if this does turn into kind of the physical tournament that you think it's going to be in terms of like the weather and everything, that guy is an absolute monster in like long matches. Like he's the one that won Shanghai last year that kind of put him on the map. And that was like the most grueling tournament of all time, apparently, for the players and spectators there. Like he's the one that just kind of outlasted everyone in like the war of attrition. So I could see him being really interesting. He kind of reminds me of Medvedev in the way he plays too. Just like long grinding rallies, waits for you to miss and has a good serve, has some power when he needs it. So I think he's really interesting in quarter two.
Artur Fies, is he in this draw? Did I look over him?
He's
somehow?
In there. Whether he's healthy or not is a different question.
Which quarter did he end up in?
He's in the bottom half of Q4, I believe.
Yeah, there he is. Okay.
He actually drew Stan Wawrinka in round one. Is probably the most compelling round one match. In terms of just fan interest, if you did not already know, Stan Wawrinka, one of the few to win a French Open while Rafa Nadal was in peak form. Did he win this twice and he won the US Open once? I think he did.
I believe so. Won three slams during the
Big Four era, which is pretty amazing. And this will be his final slam, right? He's retiring after this particular tournament. Incredible career. Always love Stan the man.
The one-handed backhand. Forever,
anytime anything good happens in tennis, I'll always do the stand sign, you know. But Fies would have been a really, really fun bet if I had confidence he was going to make it through physically.
You said it the other day on the radio side, Drew, which is this is starting to become his career, right?
Yeah, very obviously. It's concerning. Yeah. Yeah, he would be a top four player on tour right now if he was able to stay healthy.
just to give you a sense of the root, you know, I'll tribute to shout out to Dan Weston, who is doing cricket these days and not tennis, but taking a page from his book of aggregating numbers from a year and 6 months. I have Sinner, obviously, as number one. I'm talking about serve and return serve. I'm putting them together. So 100 average player, 110 is elite. You get above that, you are sort of superstar. So sort of EGA peak, 115s, 116s, that kind of thing. I have Sinner, 1 year numbers, 115.4, 6 month numbers, 116. As far as 1 year numbers, Djokovic would be second at 110, but I don't have any 6 month numbers on him. Rude is right there after that, 109.4 1 year, but Rude's 6 month numbers are 113.7. That's how good he's been. Rafa Hova coming on after
I
that.
Saw that. I saw something similar, and I gotta say, like, I think that's fair for pricing everyone else in the tournament below Sinner, looking at those numbers. But hold, break, and serve, return, win. Like, if you've watched many Sinner matches, like, he's winning. He's putting together those numbers, and I think he's playing, you know, largely at, like, 70, 75%. Like, it's not like he's trying to win every single point, and I wonder if he did try to, if he could be putting up much, much higher numbers than that.
Sinner,
because Sinner, yeah, because it's it, he's doing the thing now with the greats do, where when he needs to flip the switch, and it's like, you know, like, or like in the match against Rude, Rome is a great example, right? Like, if you use Rude and Sinner's hold break numbers and project points, you know, like do a full projection of how will this match play out, right? Like, it would have told you that the closing price there, Sinner minus 700, was insane, right? Like, just with those numbers that you just quoted, right? And so, you know, if you were blindly just playing those, you would have been like, this is a bet of the year, Rude. Rude in this, you know, in this final, right? And Rude played well. He broke early. Like, Sinner, like, you know, kind of was, you know, played his way into the match. But, you know, after getting broken, Sinner was literally like, I guess I'll break back now. And he broke back. And then he gets to the end of the set and he's like, you know what? I don't really feel like playing a tie break. I'll break here. And he broke. And it's just like, he's doing the thing like Djokovic used to do, where, you know, like, you, it, the data didn't support like the true dominance that was really there. And I feel like in a lot of ways, any type of even using the data for Sinner is going to undershoot a little bit what he can do when he has to do it.
You know what? That's probably all true, Drew. He's sandbagging the whole damn ATP tour. That's what he's doing. No, it's, yeah. You're absolutely right, because obviously you can't take everything, you know, sacredly, right? There is dirtiness,
sure,
and in the numbers as well, and it's probably true. All right, so what we're saying, we all like Rude. We all like Rude to win the quarter. We like Rude in a matchup or whatever price that's going to be against Djokovic, although we would all prefer that Rude would stop playing in Geneva currently. Yeah. I believe we all agree on that as well.
He might have an SGA thing, though, where he feels like he needs to be out there playing every day to be his sharpest. I don't know.
He has fallen really far in the rankings, and I wonder if it's just like every opportunity he gets to kind of move up a little bit, he's going to take now.
Maybe. Yeah, could be. And then quarter two is interesting with Medvedev, and I kind of want to see what Cerundolo's price is. Other than that, before we go to the women, you do like Sasha Zverev over Hodar, though, in quarter four.
Well, it's going to be price dependent. I'm kind of curious if the market is hot on Zverev, then I think we're bombs away on Rude for the final and Hodar for Q4.
Zach,
do you get a sense that there will be market support for Zverev in those two?
I think that there will be. I do think Hodar's been priced pretty outrageously, like right away, like right after his breakout, like you're seeing him at the top of the board. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of value in grabbing him.
Okay.
I do kind of wonder, like, what do your numbers say for Fritz, who lost to Popper in straight sets, I believe, yesterday? Not a great performance, but I do kind of wonder if, like, early in this tournament, it's easy enough for him to play his way into form, because
I love that you asked this. You ready for my numbers? I have Fritz as a 0.03% chance, 0.03% chance to win. I have him as a 0.5% chance to be in the final, And I have him as a 1.8% chance to win his quarter.
See, he's the type of player, though, that you put him on the court against Hodar in a best of five, and, like, I just won't feel confident in Hodar beating him.
Yeah, it's maybe. I guess, you know, in the sense that I do think that the Heat will play to the strength of the less traditional clay players. It will be interesting in the first couple of days of this tournament if it's as hot as they say. If the clay plays different than the traditional Roland Garros, which usually opens the door for the clay specialists, right?
Let me ask this one. I lied. One last question, which has nothing to do with the French Open, but is more beyond the French Open. If you took your excitement for João Fonseca when he was coming up and now compare it to your excitement for Rafael Hodar, who at this point, maybe you have an idea, but in the moment of excitement, which excitement is more justified, if that makes any sense?
I mean, I would say Hodar pretty clearly.
Me too.
I still stay Fonseca. I think he's got to get himself in shape. Like, that's pretty clear to me, but I still think weapons wise, like, you just need to have it to beat, you know, the top two guys. And I really think that forehand and even the serve eventually will be high level for Fonseca, but like the body is an issue.
I'm going strictly on eye test. Hodar's 6'3", 160. Like, he's a very physically impressive player on the court. Fonseca was kind of doing it with some impressive shot making, which you can't teach, obviously. But I was kind of always like, I'll believe it when I see him go through an off season and come back more physically impressive. And I guess we're saying the same thing, Zach, which is he needs to get in shape. And if that happens, then, you know, maybe he realizes the potential. But I think physically, to me, eye test wise, Hoda's already there. And I mean, he only won one tournament on this run in, right? He won Marrakech. And then made the semifinals in Barcelona. Took on a very, very, very sharp Feast and lost in three. He made the quarterfinals in Madrid. I thought, you know, he performed, I thought, well enough in that quarterfinal loss to Sinner that you have to be like, okay, this guy might be the second best player on clay right now. And then his loss to Dardari, I thought, was some fatigue, some inexperience, and some just the conditions were very weird. When they finished that match, I think the fact that he didn't close it out in the second set there, he just kind of let go of the rope. So I don't hold that against him too much. I think he's a pretty special player.
I was quoting -320 on Sinner because that's what we were talking about with him on the radio side this morning on a numbers game on VSiN. But DraftKings right now, Jannik Sinner -275 to win the tournament. Sasha Zverev, the next shortest shot at 11-1. Novak, 16-1. Fies and Hodar, both at 25-1. And Casper Ruud at 28-1. Then it's all the way to 50-1 from Medvedev. So those are your men's numbers right there, outrights. Still waiting on.
Yeah. My fare for Zverev is 25-1. So 11-1 is poison. My fare for Djokovic is 55-1. So 16-1 is mega poison.
Ruud,
64-1 for me for Ruud, so 28-1 is laughable. Hodar, fair 70, so 25-1 is laughable.
I think you're suggesting Jannik Sinner is going to win this tournament.
And I honestly don't think you can touch any of these bombs and be like, hey, what if something crazy happens? I mean, honestly, like we're in the Sinner accidentally hits a ball, girl in the neck gets defaulted territory.
Yeah.
Look at Zverev's first few rounds, by the way. Like, I'm not even sure he's going to be there in the third or fourth round if he continues to play the way he's been playing.
You said, you kind of hinted you think there are some questions about his health and fitness right now?
Gil said that. I'm not sure what Zverev's health's like. I mean, he does, like, statistically, his numbers are down in terms of, like, MPH on, like, every single shot. Especially the serve. Like, I think he was 3 miles per hour lower than usual. So I think that maybe that back is a problem, but I think Gil must have seen something as well.
Dealing with a back injury that forced him to withdraw from Hamburg. So his medical team advised him to take time to recover to ensure he's fit for Roland Garros. So he'll be playing, but that's what's currently alien.
It's you know, we have four recent samples of Sinner, Zverev, yeah. Indian Wells, Miami, Monte Carlo, and Madrid. He was a non-compete in all four.
Yeah. I'm still, you remember Bublik's run, and was it the U.S. Open? Bublik had that great run, and he was crushing people. And then Sinner destroyed him. And you remember what Bublik said to him at the net, where he goes, I'm not even that bad, man.
Well, I didn't even play that poorly. Yeah. And he didn't.
Yeah. All right.
Took the record out of his hand.
To the lady side? Yes. Let's do it. This is where
quarters
it gets
up. If you'd like to look at Bet365, I saw quarters.
Oh, can you share? Can you share what some of them are for us?
I can. Quarters? Yes.
Hold on. Hell yeah.
Zach Cohen live Bet365 quarters.
All right. Sabalenka -163 to win quarter one. Coco is +120 to win quarter two. Iga is -125 to win quarter three. Rybakina +162 to win quarter four. And Andreeva's +175 down there.
I think that tells the story of what the draw is. This four top heavy, you know, we have a top heavy four woman French Open.
What was, by the way, back to the men's for a second? Are those out yet, Zach, or just the women's?
I didn't see men's. I just saw women's.
Okay. The women's side, with that as a precursor to it, what Zach was just saying. So the women's side of things, just to sort of say who's not playing, no Marketa Vondrousova, if you care, three missed drug tests, no Paula Badosa. She chose not to go through qualifying, and guess what? She didn't get a wild card. Maddie Keys is playing, even though she's kind of like injury concern. Amanda Nisimova is playing, even though she hasn't played a single clay court match yet. So that plays into this. Quarter one, which Zach just alluded to, is the Arena Sabalenka quarter. Iva Jovic is in there, Naomi Osaka, Victoria Mboko, Maddie Keys, Jesse Pegula. But Sabalenka remains the favorite there. Q2, Coco. This really broke Coco's way. That was the first text Zach and I got this morning, was from Drew. It's very true, because that is, you know, Anisimova on paper, right, would be her biggest competition. But Anisimova dealing with a wrist injury. She hasn't played clay. Anastasia Potapova's in there. She's got good clay numbers, Mertens, but really it's a Coco quarter. And then the bottom half is where this, man, all these names, Q3, the Iga quarter, Swiatek, I was saying this morning on the radio show with Zach, I was like, you couldn't hand pick players, you know, to better counter Iga. Yelena Ostapenko, who even in the best of times was her kryptonite, is in there. Elena Svitolina, who just beat Iga in the Rome semis, is in there. Belinda Bencic, who's always flying the ointment, is in there. And Marta Kostyuk, who, again, by raw clay numbers, is just off the charts. They're all in that Q3 with Iga. And Q4, the Rybakina quarter, Mira Andreeva, Karolina Muchova, who's a finalist here before, Jasmine Paolini, who's been a finalist here before, Sorana Kirsteia, who's had a great clay season, Barbora Krejcikova, who has won this tournament before, Ludmila Samsonova, we can go on and on. Those are basically how those quarters break down. Drew, we'll start with you. What loops to mind?
I mean, that's our final four, I think.
Sabalenka,
Goff, Iga, Rybakina. Iga has the hardest road, which means her -125 quarter price is a little tough for me to swallow. I think you're right. Q3 is the quarter of death, and it's specifically the quarter of death for Iga. Like, this does not feel like a, I mean, maybe it's random, but, yeah, to have like, you know, personal obstacles combined with some of the sharpest players playing, feels a little on the nose. You know, so this is like a, hey, we'll test you to get back. Coco Gauff got the defending champion cupcake draw. They may live to regret those words, but I thought before we saw the draw that this was relatively flat, that all four of the women that exist at the top four seeds, I thought they all had about a 20-ish% chance to win this. I was not seeing the market distinction of Iga and Sabalenka clearly ahead of Coco and Rybakina personally. I thought they were pretty tightly bunched. And now post-draw with Coco getting the softest quarter and Iga getting the toughest quarter, this breaks to me as, you know, Coco ought to be the small favorite for this tournament, and she's not. So I'm a little bit out on a limb here that Coco's going to go back-to-back.
Wow. Let me give you that outright to DraftKings. Iga, plus 250 is the short shot. She's won four Roland Garros titles. They are giving her a lot of market respect, even with that draw. Again, if you miss the Italian Open, Iga's got a new coach in the Rafa Nadal camp. Maybe it's finally the perfect alignment where it's, you know what, forget all this other stuff, play to your strengths. They did some things. She comes out in she got sick previously. It was in Madrid she got sick. She withdrew. She never withdraws. Rome, she's destroying people. And I mean Osaka, Pagula. It's like peak Iga. And then she loses to Svitolina in the semis. But we got a glimpse, right? And that glimpse was enough, I think, to make this plus 250. Arena Sabalenka's plus 275. Rybakina 6-1. Coco plus 650.
Yeah.
Which is, you probably could shop around and get better than that, too.
I'm holding 10-1 for what it's worth. I think 650 is still value. My fare for her is plus 450 right now for Coco. My fare for Sabalenka is plus 525. My fare for Iga is plus 600. And my fare for Rybakina is plus 615. There is then a huge, huge gap. Andreeva, fifth choice. Svitolina, sixth choice. Kostyuk, seventh choice. Pagula, eighth choice for me. And all of them are in like the 12 to 20 range.
Just to do the raw numbers thing, I have one player who's got better numbers than Iga. Iga, actually, if I'm doing 1 year numbers, Coco's actually better than Iga too. But if I'm doing 6 month numbers, there still is one player that has better numbers 1 year and 6 months than all these other players, and it's Kostyuk, believe it or not.
Yeah. Can we do a quick sidebar on that? Because I saw the same thing. And the only cold water I can throw on it is level of competition. She's putting these numbers together. They're freaking impossibly good, but she's playing on average a player that's ranked like 40th or 50th by my calculations. Her median opponent, Kostyuk's median opponent, is 67th, whereas Iga's median opponent is 34. Coco's median opponent, 24. You know, like it's pretty clear that like Kostyuk is just bombing the bad. Whereas Iga and Coco are at least doing this type of, particularly their break numbers. Coco's break numbers is absurd. Like her break number on clay is tickling 55%. Like that's like elite, all time, as good as I've ever seen. Her serve number is hellaciously poor, but most of that is because of double faulting. And if you take any type of takeaways of her early run through Rome as evidence that some of the double faulting is improved, I think maybe, you know, move her hold number up 5-ish% by reducing her double faulting from 10 to 5, then she is rating, you know, as, you know, in the exact same type of ballpark as an Iga. I don't know. Zach, do you throw cold water on Kostyuk based on quality of opposition, or do you think she's for real?
I think she's as real as anyone outside of the top tier. I am with you, by the way. Like, I tweeted this like midway through the second set of Svitolina Goff that I think Coco's the player to beat heading into the French Open. And what I meant by that is player to bet. Like, there's no player to beat on the women's side. But I think like it goes a further than just Rome with the serving. Like, back to early Miami, there hasn't been a match where she's had a double-digit double fault percentage. And I think she's making a lot more first serves. I think the forehand looks a lot better. I think the Goff looks like she's on fire at the right time. So Goff would be my pick. I'm upset with myself that I didn't take it at plus 900, which is what I was looking at last night. But I'll still grab some plus 650. So feeling good about that. And I'll say this about like Iga and Coco at the same time. Svitolina was just like on an all-time heater in Rome, which she's now done three times. Like, she was playing lights out tennis to the point that both of them were playing well and had no chance somehow.
Yeah. We as experienced tennis betting gentlemen, not going to get fooled again by Svitolina getting on a heater in Rome. No, not again. Been there before.
if I came to you from the future, gentlemen, and I said one of those four didn't win their quarter, it's funny because I think my answer is, I know who the answer is, but I also think she's also as likely to win the tournament. I think it's Iga. You know where I'm going with this. If there's one of these four did not win their quarter, give me the rankings. Who's most likely, who's second most likely, so on.
All right, this is going to surprise you guys. You ready? Most likely quarter winner among those four for me is Coco. And it's because of the strength of the quarter. I have her at a fair price at plus 113. Second most likely, Rybakina for me. I think Q4 actually is kind of sneaky weak. Andreeva, it depends how you feel about Andreeva, I guess. If you, like, Andreeva's, we can get, maybe we table this for just a hot second, but I think Q4 is actually kind of weak, and my Andreeva number is cold relative to market. So I have Rybakina second most likely, and then I have Sabalenka third. I have Iga the fourth. My fair price for Iga to come through that quarter is plus 166. And I think a ton of it is what we're talking about, which is Kostyuk is in there and she's playing gnarly, and Svitolina, and, you know, and to a lesser extent,
the Hamburglar.
They're in there. They're in there.
On the other side of the court, she'll lose her mind.
I said it's a deal too. Like, it's not just that Ostapenko owns Iga. She like plays cleaner tennis in the run up to facing her because she just wants to beat her again. So yeah. Like, if you can get an odds on like Ostapenko to reach the like round of 16, I would consider that as well, just because like I think she's going to do her best to at least set up the match.
Interesting point you make about Q4, Drew, about Rybakina's quarter, because I think you're right, directionally right. I don't think Andreeva's as good as the market does. I mentioned Paolini, who's not, you know, this is not peak Paolini, that amazing sort of 2-year run late in her career. Muhova, this does not feel like peak Muhova, although I guess she's always capable. Kirstea has great clay numbers, but do we really think Sorana Kirstea is going to be able to rise up? Maybe. And certainly not peak Krejcikova. So you're right. Maybe, though those names are abundant, maybe it's all bullshit, you know? Maybe it really is all about Rybakina there.
Kirstea is maybe the wild card.
Although
like she feels like the type of player who's peaking to the degree where she'll take care of business against the weak and then lose to Rybakina in straights, you know. Maybe I'm giving her too little credit here, but Kirstea has gotten beaten by Coco twice on clay in this run up. You know, Coco got her in Miami as well. And maybe it's just that she can't handle the quality of return from Coco. But I mean, Rybakina is playing supremely well on this calendar year. If you haven't been paying attention, it's just kind of a matter of if she's running out of gas or if she's really pointing at this tournament. And I think that kind of question goes for Sabalenka as well. Like, it's unclear to me whether Rybakina and Sabalenka finished like the sunshine double and we're a little bit of an exhale, and like, you know, we need, you know, how seriously are we taking this clay run? Like, we'll run through some tournaments if we can, but I'm not going to leave it all on the court because it's a long season. That's kind of the whiff I got, certainly from Sabalenka, and to maybe a lesser degree from Rybakina, just because they haven't played, you know, they haven't played as high quality as what we saw from them, I think, on hard court.
Seeing Sabalenka minus 145 to win quarter one at BetMGM, which now has odds up, by the way, that's the type of price I'm looking for. Yeah.
I think that should be shorter. I'm sorry. I'm using my vernacular incorrectly. I think she should be plus money. I don't think minus 140 is correct.
I thought it would be around minus 140, so I'm hoping that I could get around there, but if I have to take minus 145, I think I will. Gil asking that question about Iga, by the way, was totally like when Pam's asking Michael who in the office he's dating, and it's just don't want the answer, but you know you're getting it.
Yeah, that's right.
My numbers say Pegula is a bet at 650 in Q1.
Oh, interesting.
And my numbers say they don't actually support Mboko, which is surprising. I bet her a lot so far this calendar year. And for some reason, they say 8-1 is short. I think as big questions for me about how to read her, how to read her clay numbers right now. Cause it's a super small sample, but she's got some stuff in there that says she should be like a top 10 player. I don't know.
The Sabalenka draw would be terrifying if it was a hard court, but I do think the clay's making things a lot easier.
Yeah.
What's your Anisimova Q2 number? Just out of curiosity, Zach, what does it say?
+650. I think that was the same at Bet365 too, which they just took theirs down. So now I only have MGM.
Like I said, hasn't played clay. If she showed up and all of a sudden was playing great, no sign of injury to the wrist, would that scare you for Coco?
I'm most scared of Qinwen Zhang. I said that to you a little bit earlier, but like the losses have been piling up, but at least they've been closer losses to elite competition over the last couple of weeks and tournaments. I think that like she's won here before technically, like at the Olympics, and it's still the same best of three format. Like I think that's the scariest player to me, is if she finds her game, that's the one I'm most nervous about.
For those who missed it, Zach said Zhang Xinwen. Drew, didn't you mention her earlier this week as well?
No, we were talking about with one of our tennis friends. We were talking about where is she? What's happening? It wasn't as much. Right. Should we bet her? I think. I have her third choice here. Actually, fourth choice after Potapova. I have her at like 19 to 1-ish. I have Anisimova at second choice in Q2 at 4-1, but with the wrist injury, I don't think she's even remotely touchable.
Yeah. So Danny just sent me the BetMGM one. So
man, it is such a weak quarter. I don't know. First of all, it cracks me up, by the way. This is a completely unrelated sidebar, but Anastasia Potapova, she had to play through qualifying twice to get into Madrid and Italy.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. But then she's ranked here. How is she seated here? How in the world did that? Like, I never understand how the seeding works for the French Open. I know Wimbledon used to be weird, and now they've just made it more normal. But like, it's kind of wild that she had to qualify her way into those two Masters, and then here she's seated.
She's been on a bit of a heater, and I saw a funny tweet that was like, she's playing really well with her newest face or something.
She's Austrian now. Yeah. Yeah.
She's Austrian. She is one of those players that I have a bet on or against her. I will say, you should probably watch this tennis bet. First quarter, BetMGM, Sabalenka -145, Jesse Pegula 6-1, Imboko 8-1, then Osaka 11-1. Second quarter, Coco +138, Zhang Xinwen and Anisimova both +650, Noskova +750, Potapova 10-1, Q3, Iga +125, Elina Svitolina 3-1, Kostyuk +450, Bencic 12-1, Ostapenko's all the way at 16-1. Wow. And then Q4, Rybakina +140, Mira Andreeva 2-1, Karolina Muchova +650, Sorana Cristea 11-1. So I didn't mention Haley Baptiste. You don't like Haley Baptiste on this surface? Nothing?
I don't trust her in a slam, I think, at this point is where I'm at.
Yeah.
I would say she is about the 40th choice for me in this field. She's kind of down there with the Teresa Valentovas
of the world. All right. Yeah. So Coco's your best bet? That's the Coco quarter, Coco tournament?
Coco quarter actually is pretty close to fair for me. I'm actually not seeing a whole lot of value in these women's quarters, or at least the value that I'm seeing, I'm not really interested in. Like my numbers want me to bet Pegula Q1. Yeah, I can live without that. My numbers want me to bet Anisimova Q2. No freaking way. She's Anisimova +650 for Q2. Like she's probably 80-20 to play every match, to play five matches, like let alone win five because of the wrist injury. So that's an unbettable number. Q3, my numbers like Kostyuk a little. They're against Iga, against Svitolina. I might actually play some Kostyuk there, but again, like sincere fear for me that Kostyuk's getting it done against weak competition, and as soon as the going gets tough, it's going to be a different story for her. But then again, if the Hamburglar takes out Iga, then you know she might actually have a very winnable path to a you know a, to a kind of a momentous career milestone, which would be a you know quarter at the French Open. She has never really played especially well here, Marta. That is. But boy, oh boy, like 11 straight wins on clay.
By the way, can we go back to the nickname for Yelena Ostapenko? Is that her actual nickname, or are you playing off my nickname of the hamburger? Is that what you're doing right there with her?
Yeah. I should have more respect for former French Open champion.
That's right.
Like people forget, Yelena Ostapenko won a slam here.
I remember one of the first months of VSiN, she won the French Open. I remember just telling people are like, who? What?
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. So I have Sinner at a price that no longer available. I have Iga at +275 pre-draw. Draw doesn't make me happier, certainly, but I do like her potential to go into super Iga form and still win this. So I still have hope on that. But yes, Coco got the best of this. Iga got the worst of it. Yeah. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I think my favorite two bets on the women's side are Coco title and Rybakina Q4.
Okay. Zach, your favorite?
Coco to win the title. I think I'm going to have Sabalenka to win quarter one, even if the price isn't great. And I might take some Muhova quarter four just out of like respect for the women that we've all been hyping up for years. But I think Andreeva's beatable here. I think that if Muhova plays her way like deep enough into the tournament, I'd feel pretty good about her in a matchup against Rybakina on this surface, at least. A lot of ifs.
I'm smiling because it's become kind of a thing that when the three of us get together, we have more random bets on Karolina Muhova than I think any
Someone has to do it. I'll do it.
But you know what? I'm with you, Zach. +650, Q4. I might.
She
have
won something this year, and I didn't have a bet on her. So now we're officially divorced.
She beat Coco, and I had been like, was like finally swearing off betting her in that matchup, and then she beat her.
She beat Mboko in Doha. Oh, I had Mboko win that title. Yeah, that's why I'm officially divorced from Mukova. I hope she has a great rest of her career, but I hope it's on the Challenger Tour or whatever the women's challenger is called. I think there's one thing we haven't said about the women's tour that I would like your guys' opinion on. Feels chalky. Okay. If this feels like we could see a very chalky best four women on tour are your final four. Okay. What kind of price? I mean, the market's kind of telling us you're going to get Sabalenka as a favorite over Coco, probably pretty close to last year's final price. I don't think that's really a hot topic. Maybe like -150 or something like that. I would like Coco there. What would you guess Rybakina Iga would be?
Very, very coin flippy.
Coin flippy? Iga small favorite?
Small favorite. Yeah.
Okay.
Didn't they play recently? Am I crazy? Or I feel like they did. But I don't know.
If they did, it was. Did they play in Rome? I'm forgetting. Yep. Who did the? I forget who Rybakina lost to in Rome, but I thought they were on kind of a collision course somewhere, but they never played. We haven't seen Rybakina Iga since Australian Open quarterfinals.
Okay. Yeah.
In that match, I think Iga was a small favorite, if I remember correctly. Rybakina 7-5-6-1.
Rybakina lost to Svitolina in Rome right before Iga lost to Svitolina.
That's right. Yeah. So then in the finals, Sabalenka small favorite over Rybakina.
Yeah.
Oh, you have Rybakina winning?
No, I'm just curious what you think prices would be on these.
-125-ish. I think it would be really short.
Sabalenka Iga 50-50.
If Iga gets that far, there's no chance she got the favorite.
You think Iga small favorite in that one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Iga Coco.
Iga.
Okay.
You're going to get a really good price on Coco in that match, and it'll be really tempting to take.
Yeah. I priced that out like we know that that's the final, and I'm at Coco -101, Iga +101. Fair total there is about 22.5.
Betting so question. Be
a war.
Are you betting these on prediction markets at all, Drew?
I probably will. I thought maybe we would have our first quarter prices pop there, but there's somebody's asleep at the wheel.
What about just a broader tennis question also? Sinner, Sabalenka, threatening, not this year perhaps, but next year, if this continues with poor pay as they see it, poor percentage of the pie for the players, that they would consider boycotting Roland Garros. Do you think that's real? Do you think that's a real possibility?
I don't think so. I know it's mostly out of solidarity from the lower level players, but those players are doing very well winning the types of matches that they're winning.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of hot air.
Nothing burger. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just put yourself in that room with the chief sponsor. Excuse me? You're boycotting? Like, you know, I cannot imagine the headlining sponsors for a Sinner or a Sabalenka would be especially pleased to find out that they are electing not to play because of pay.
I'm going to guess you're right, but worth bringing up. We'll see.
Maybe that's how Zverev wins a slam. He's like the last player left.
I wins. That's right. He's like, I'm up to it, daddy. I'm playing.
I mean, he could win this slam if Sinner gets defaulted.
Well, this is Zverev had...
He almost won that one with Djokovic getting defaulted.
Yeah, the U.S. Open finals racket against Dominic Thiem lost in the weird one where Djokovic hit the ump, or the lines person, I should say. And then remember the Carlitos final took that overturn by the umpire, or was it the umpire came out of a chair? And he got hosed on that call. So, yeah. This was
he should have found a way to lose it.
He should have won. All right, boys.
I'm old enough to remember Zverev should have won against Carlos in Australia in the semifinals. And he unwound himself there. I think it's not obvious to me he would have found a way to unwind himself against Carlos in that final. Even though he was the better player for a lot of it.
The ankle match too, like I agree with him kind of that I think he was going to win that match, but like it was close. I think it was 1-1 in sets when he suffered that injury. And like, we kind of look at that and talk about it as if he was going to beat him. Don't remember the exact year, but when Zverev suffered the actual injury that took him out.
2023 French Open, yeah. I think.
I hearken back to the Milos Raonic thing, which I might've quoted last time. But I'll quote again, which is he was sort of reflecting on his career. Milos Raonic, for those who don't know, is kind of a serve bot from Canada who, you know, lamented the fact, like so many of his generation, he was like, well, you know, we had the big three. So, you know, these guys were older than us and we always were kind of waiting. We always thought in the back of our minds, well, they'll get so old that we'll have a chance to win slams. And of course, didn't quite work out that way. And what he was saying was, he goes, the difference now is these two guys, Sinner and Alcaraz, he was talking about, they're younger than everybody. So, like, I don't know how those players process it. Hodar and Fonseca would be the younger of those two guys. And I wonder, how long do you think it will take for one of these guys not to win a slam, barring injury? Like, I just really wonder. Years? Certainly not happening this year, it doesn't feel like.
I don't want to be a downer, but we might have seen the best of Alcaraz.
Oh.
I know you're kind of poking about the golf being a factor, but like, could also just be his style, you know, and the way that the equipment is nowadays. And, you know, it's there's 100%. Yeah. This isn't like a pitcher with the UCL.
I do find it concerning that like Juan Carlos's biggest thing with him is that he didn't have kind of the workout that he wished he had.
Yeah.
And then you see quotes directly from Alcaraz where he's like, I just want to be a normal kid and I don't want to be a slave to tennis and stuff. Like, you kind of see it, I don't know, kind of unfolding that way. I think Sinner's way more just driven by the results and the process and all of it.
Yeah.
Well, remember, Nick?
I'm going to carve out a slice of a pie of probability that next year's French Open. And, you know, we always get to make the joke, okay, men's French Open starts on Sunday, June 14th this year or whatever.
It never starts this year when there's no French Open.
The Men's French Open starts on June, 15th, 2027. Yeah. Presumably when there's an Alcaraz in the field. But I would actually carve out a slice of probability that next year, the kind of narrative heading in is, we've had a couple of serious battles in the run up between Sinner and Hoda. And like, is he, the answer to Sinner's dominance on tour? Like, Sinner wins the, not a calendar slam, but a Djokovic slam that wraps around and includes the Australian Open. And then, can Hoda be the one to step up and end this run of reign of terror,
You're saying Hoda, but I think you meant Holga.
I hope he plays again. that's Achilles is another question. The Achilles, the wrist, these aren't, we don't have a laundry list of great success stories from those types of injuries and players returning to form.
Yeah.
Nick, it's different than Tommy John in baseball.
I wanted to throw in Nick Kyrgios's line about Sinner and Alcaraz. He was like, Sinner will be better because Carlos likes girls too much. It was Nick's line.
Fair enough.
So, same thing. Yeah. We kind of said similar things about, not in terms of the girls or in terms of being a slave to tennis, but the way Rafa played, remember we had that? Oh, the way he plays, it's not going to last. So, who knows in the end?
Yeah, I mean, it's concerning. Like Zach said, it's concerning that he may not want to grind. And it's also concerning that he has 7 slams and he's 23 and he has a career slam. Like, if that happens to you at that age and you've accomplished, what else do you have to do here? Like looking into the future and being like, I'm going to take down Djokovic's all-time slam record. Like, okay. Like, that's a, and especially with Sinner on tour, even if you're splitting them every year, you're like, okay, grind on tour for the next, 10 years and you maybe get there, if no one else comes along, versus like, hey, I'm the youngest man to ever win the career slam in tennis. And I just kind of want to be a DJ on Ibiza this summer. I kind of want to see if I could, get my, Dubai World Tour card.
Funny, that's
in
exactly
golf.
What it wants to be, is a DJ.
Yeah.
Exactly what it wants to be. Boys, I appreciate it. Drew Dinsick at whale_capper on Twitter. Deep Dive Podcasts, NBC Sports Bet the Edge, his 2 podcasts. Are you going to the Belmont, by the way, Drew?
No. I'll be on the East Coast, I think, but not in New York. I forget where I'll be. But it's good. And it's a shame, too. It's going to be the best race of the three.
Who's your horse again? The little Chief Wallaby again?
Chief Wallaby still. I'm still a Chief Wallaby man. Yeah.
All right. Is Zach
He'll
Cohen?
Come through for me eventually.
Eventually. I don't know if he'll run out of races, but eventually. Zach Cohen, who works at VEASAN, does it all for VEASAN. And of course, what's the tennis channel involvement? Are we doing anything still there?
For 1000s and potentially slams, I do some short videos for them. So maybe French Open, we're kind of waiting to find out, but have been doing 1000s.
Okay. Whenever Mitch Michaels asks us on a podcast, we're happily doing that. I apologize, Mitch, if I said anything out of turn. Zach can be followed at Betting on X on Twitter as well. I hope there was some food for thought there and will lead to some bets. The men's side might be straightforward, but the women's side will absolutely be awesome. Can't wait. For Drew, for Zach, thank you for listening and good luck with all your bets. French Open 2026.